حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، I'm afraid I'm going to start a subject that I'm not going to finish. And that means that I'll have to come back here again. So we can finish the subject. And there's an ayat in the Quran where Allah says, قَدْ أَفْلَهَا مَنْ زَكَّاهَا. A person who does tazkiyah. Someone who does tazkiyah is successful. Meaning that if a person wants to be successful, he needs to do tazkiyah of his nafs. This word tazkiyah is translated as purification, even though that is not a good translation. Tazkiyah really means to grow, to develop, to make oneself better in order that we reach our potential. That's what it means. Tazkiyah. And this is what I wanted to speak about. But as I said, these 2-3 days, I'll just give an introduction, maybe a few steps that a person can take. And the importance of this is such that when we look at the reason why prophets came and the purpose of the coming of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in one of the more fundamental reasons why Allah gives why our Prophet came, he said he came to purify, he came to do tazkiyah of the people, yuzakihim. He came to do tazkiyah of the people. That's why he came for. So we see the importance of it, that a person who truly wants to achieve his purpose and goal and potential of reaching his master and his creator, then tazkiyah is the way to do that. And I want to use the word tazkiyah because when I translate it, I'll have to say 4 or 5 words with it. So that's the reason I gave you the 4 or 5 words, what it means. It means to grow, develop, better ourselves, to become complete. That's what it means. And hence, when we look at, when we use the word to become good, or to make ourselves better, or to improve ourselves, a lot of times there's a misconception that when the world says it, it has one meaning, and when Allah says it, it has a different meaning. When you hear it from others and they tell you, you need to become good. So what would you understand from it? What would you take from it? It means that, you know, right now you're not good or you're bad and you're being asked to change and become good. That's what we'll get out of it, right? Whenever we say, you know, that, for example, you need to better yourself, it means that you're not good right now, so you need to make yourself better, meaning that you have to change. Many people run away from this because of this reason. Because changing is hard. Changing is difficult. I mean, have you ever tried to change yourself? You know, for example, you, how many of you have ever made a New Year resolution? Right? You're all shy to say it, you know? All right, you don't have to reply to that, right? But answer this question. How many of you have actually kept that resolution? Just imagine this. Any resolution you made in your life, whether it's for New Year's or for Eid or 15 Shaban or whatever, if you made a resolution for yourself, how many times did you actually keep that resolution? You know, you actually say that, you know what, I'm going to, you know, exercise from now on, get in shape, you know, build my biceps. How many of you have actually gone there and done that and gone with it all the way? You see, it's difficult. Why? Because you're asking yourself to change. And it's difficult. And so people, because of all the broken resolutions they have experienced in their life, when they're told to change, to become better, to be good, because it requires change, they run away from it. They run away whenever Allah says that improve yourself, make yourself better, then because it requires change, we don't want to do it. We run away from it because it's difficult. We know it. Through our own life, we know it. But when Allah says it, it doesn't mean to become something else. This is what I want you all to first understand. When we're talking about change and becoming good, it doesn't mean that Allah is trying to tell you to be someone else, or to try to be someone else, or try to act like someone else, or want to become like someone else. He's not asking you to do that. What Islam means by it is that, listen, Allah, by telling you to become good, is saying that you become yourself. That you become yourself. You don't have to change into anything. The way I made you, this is what Allah is saying, the way I made you is good. You just need to find yourself and become yourself. This is what change is. Change is that Allah is not asking you to become someone else. He's saying you become yourself. This is where you will find yourself to be better. It's us who have gone away from whom we are. Really, how many of us actually know ourselves? How many of us actually know who we actually are? Many times we have made ourselves into a fictional character that we want to imagine about ourselves. We're not the real we. We are the hero that we want to be. I don't know me. I know that fantasy person that I want to be. This is usually what happens. And we make it so much that we live that fantasy life, and we live that dream, we live that nightmare sometimes, until we die, we wake up and see, wow, this is me. And we wake up from our dream. So the issue is what Allah is saying, that listen, for you to become better, you don't need to change into anything. You just need to get back into what I made you to be. Just get back into what I made you to be. This is the first thing to understand about change and about self-improvement. First thing to understand about it is to get back into who we are. Understand myself. Who am I? The way I'm made is good. Other religions say, no, you are a born sinner. You are doomed. You are headed towards evil. Your heart is inclined towards bad. You are going towards destruction. That's who you are. So in order for you to be saved and salvaged, you need to not be yourself and hang on to someone else. Islam is the opposite of that. Islam is saying, no, you have been made good. You have been created good. For you to become good, just recognize yourself and you will know that you have become good. That's the whole idea of man arafa nafsahu. Whoever knows himself, faqad arafa rabbahu. He knows his Rabb, his Creator, his Lord. That's the meaning of that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So when we are discussing this, what I want here to discuss is that our reaching our goal and potential is not by other things than ourselves. It is just ourselves. We are what we are going to become good. This is what happens. A tree reaches its potential by giving fruits. You see, a tree reaches its potential, its height, by giving fruits. When the fruits come, you say, wow, the tree is fruitful, it's good, it's reached its potential, its height, wow. That's when the tree reaches potential. But let's say, would you call a tree that's decorated as a tree that, oh wow, this tree is great? Let's say you put lights on the tree, you know, and you know, put all kinds of fake flowers on the tree. Would that make it good? It wouldn't be good. It hasn't reached, it's not its height, it's not its potential. In fact, it's an ugly thing. It's an ugly thing that when you put lights on a tree, you're like, man, the tree itself is beautiful. Why are you putting lights on it? Why are you decorating it? It itself is a decoration. The same thing is with us. We ourselves are good. We don't need to put anything on ourselves to look good. You don't need a toupee on your head. The bald head looks just fine. Right? It looks just fine. You're handsome with it, man. Don't worry about it. It's good. But you see, we try to put these fake things on ourselves to look good, and we don't understand that. That's not what's making you good. What makes you good is when you reach your potential. You reach your potential when you look within yourself, not outside of yourself.
Lord Salawat.
And so the goal of Islam, you see, starts with tazkiyah. It starts with tazkiyah. It doesn't, you see, and tazkiyah is enough. Really, Allah has given you a one pill solution for all problems. Whatever problem you have in life, whether it's distress, whether it's blood pressure, whether it's heartaches and pains, whether it's depression, right? Whatever problems you have in your life, Allah has given you a one pill solution. He says, listen, ibadat and prayers and all that, that's, you know, that's not needed. Really. Really, it's not needed. Where do they fall in? You know where it falls in. I'll tell you where it falls in. You don't need that. Allah is saying, listen, tazkiyah, that's all you need. Tazkiyah is all you need to be successful. Why? Because very clear, Allah didn't say, do tazkiyah and pray and you'll be successful. Did He say that? No, He said, just do tazkiyah and you're successful. Improve yourself and you're successful. Grow and you're successful. Did He say that? No, do tazkiyah and fast also. Or do majlis. Or azah, or any of these things. Did He say that? No, He said just do tazkiyah. You see, tazkiyah is a one pill, just one pill, take it, and that will make you successful. That's what's going to make you successful. This just gave as an introduction to introduce the subject. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So my friends, just one more thing and we will go into details. One more thing and we'll go into details. I am just building this subject up for you so that you understand what we are talking about. So that when we actually talk about it, then you'll know what it actually means. Tell me, if this tazkiyah is the one pill solution Allah gave us, and if this is the one thing that you need to go to Allah and to really become great, should it have a system? Should it be organized? Or is it like, just do some good and you'll be okay, you'll be fine? What should it be? Should there be a system? For example, tell me, when you go to a grocery store to buy milk, right? If you go to a grocery store, let's say you want to buy milk, would you go in the underwear department looking for the milk? You won't, right? If you're looking for something, and if the salesman comes to you, may I help you? And you say, I'm looking for milk. He'll be looking at you. You won't find it here. You're in the wrong department, man. We need to go over there. Right? That's what he's going to tell you, right? You're looking in the wrong place. You see, why? Because everything has a place. And you find it there. It has to be systemized. It has to be organized. Let me give another example. You know, have you ever seen a rocket launching? You know, I mean the one that goes in the sky, in the air, in the space. Right? You're not that goes up and comes down another town, you know? Right? A rocket launch, you know? A NASA, you know, rocket launch. Right? I don't know if there's a NASA here. There's no NASA here. Right? No, in Florida we have NASA, right? So when you go to NASA, you know, they have all kinds of things there, you know, as a show, right? To show you what's going on. So you look at the NASA rocket, you know how much time that goes in to build that thing, to make that thing, to put it together, to put the plan in, to make sure that when this is launched, it will actually go into space and the people who are in it will not just die. You know how much effort that goes in there? And each thing has to be done in an organized way, in a systematic way, that when you put each things together, each of these things, if put together in the right way, will make sure that this rocket is launched and it goes into space. Really, the effort that goes in there, and the organization that goes in there, and the system that goes in there, and the detail that goes in there is so remarkable. That when you look at this remarkable effort that has to be put in order to launch one rocket into space, then you're amazed by it. So if one rocket requires so much organization and system and detail to be launched into space, here we are launching a human being towards Allah. Imagine how much system and how much organization is involved in that. So the reason I'm saying this is because when we are speaking about tazkiyah, and tazkiyah is the way to get towards Allah, and tazkiyah is the way that's going to make you reach your potential, it doesn't come by haphazard efforts. It doesn't come by just efforts that are all around the place and you're like, oh, I did some good here and some good there. I volunteered in the masjid. I did this, I did that. You try to do all these things. That's not how you launch yourself. That's not how you go towards Allah. If Allah has said, this is the way to come to me, then obviously there has to be a system. There have to be steps. And these are the steps that I want to talk about. And each of these steps that you need to do tazkiyah comes one after another. And unfortunately, a lot of times we learn a lot of good things in speeches. But the problem that happens is that we don't learn them in a systematic way. Because we don't learn them in a systematic way, we don't know where this knowledge fits in the bigger picture. And because we don't know where this knowledge fits in the bigger picture, we are lost. We have lots of knowledge. In fact, you have enough knowledge that you don't need to know anything until the day of judgment. I'm telling you that. You have enough knowledge. You are a Shia. And you have gone to speeches in Muharram and Ramadan Man, we have so many viladas and shahadas, you can't run away from it. Every time you have it, there's some speech happening, right? And some person is giving you a bit of knowledge or an amount of knowledge. And you know what? We gain knowledge. But when we do gain it, the problem is because we don't get it in a systematic way, we don't get it step by step, we don't know how it fits in. We don't know how it fits in. It's like, for example, I see a surgery being done in YouTube. You know, you can go to YouTube and say, bypass surgery, right? And they have like actual YouTube videos of how you do bypass surgery live. Now by watching that, I just can't go and say, hey, let's practice it at home. You can't do that, right? Now if you do that, you're going to put someone in danger and yourself. Right? You can't do that. The fact is that even though you have seen the video, it doesn't mean that you know the details, you know the system behind it. For you to know that, you need to actually go and learn that. So a lot of us, because we don't have the time to learn, we don't have the time to leave our lives and go and learn in a systematic way, okay, number one, number two, number three, this is how you do it. We don't have time to do that. So a lot of us, we gain knowledge where? We gain knowledge through these outlets that we have here, these forums that we have here, either it's the majlis or the congress or conferences or seminars and these type of things. And the problem with that happens is that a lot of the knowledge that is given is not given in a systematic way. It's not given step by step, so that when you are learning something, now you are lost and say, okay, I know this, but where does it fit in my life? What's going on? How does this work? You're still lost with all the knowledge that you have. So what we want to do is try to compartmentalize that knowledge, to put it in the right department. That's what we want to do. And obviously I can't go through all the steps. And that's why I said I'm going to start a subject that I'm not going to finish. So hopefully, you know, if you ever have the chance to come back, I will try to go through some of these steps that we want to take. The first step, my friends, is let's talk about it, right? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. The first step that is required for you, and I'm saying these steps, right? The reason I'm saying these steps is because when you know these steps, it has to come in order. These steps have to come in order. Some of you might have already gone through these steps without knowing. And maybe when I'm speaking, you can reflect on that and say, wow, that was that stage of my life then. You know, or you know what, I haven't experienced that. Maybe I haven't even started going towards Allah. Right? So you can reflect on your own self while I explain these steps. What are these steps that make you go towards Allah? The first step, my friends, is called disturbance. That's what it's called. It's called disturbance. Like we have disturbance right now. Thank you. Salawat. Thank you, brother. Yes, that's the first step. Practically demonstrated to you by Al-Wilaya. The first step that a person has to go through in order that he takes this journey towards Allah is called disturbance. There's a better word for it in Farsi and Urdu. Right, it's called biqarari. This restlessness, this anxiety, this feeling of emptiness, this feeling of not going anywhere, this feeling of disillusion that, you know what, I don't like my situation. I don't like my circumstance. I don't like where I'm at. This emotion that comes from within that makes you restless and want and say that I want to change. I want to become, you know, I want to do something. I mean, this is not good. I'm not good. This disturbance that comes in, this thought that comes in, this is the first thing that is necessary for a person. This is the first step to actually going towards Allah. If a person doesn't have this, then he needs to see what's wrong with himself, really. Why? Because, my friends, the reality of the situation is, if you look in your life, really, the issue is that we have an aql, we have intellect, we have reasoning. You can't fight your reasoning. You can't fight your reasoning. Your reasoning, your aql, your intellect is there. It's there. And the job of your intellect, the job of your aql, is to give you or to make you do things to better yourself. That's what it does. Aql, what is aql? Just in a few words, I want to explain this and go forward, right? What is aql? First, understand this. When we say aql, Allah gave us an aql, a mind, a brain, you know? What does that mean? A lot of times people think that aql has been given to us to choose between right and wrong. And that's how it's decided. This is the faculty that a man has that makes him choose between right and wrong. Actually, that's incorrect. That's not right. Aql is not given to you to choose between right and wrong. Your intellect is given to you to choose between good and better. That's what it's given to you for. Not to choose between right and wrong. Right? For example, if it's freezing cold outside and if you're wearing a coat, we don't call you intelligent for that. Right? We don't say, man, this guy's intelligent. Look at him. He's wearing a coat in cold winter. You don't say that, right? Even you don't say that because you don't need to be intelligent to do that. You just need to be sensible. Being sensible is different than being intelligent. Humans are intelligent. Animals are sensible. Animals can protect themselves from harm. That's what they do. They're sensible. But humans, they're not just sensible, they're intelligent. Right? To them, an intelligent person is not that you wear a coat in the winter. An intelligent person is what type of coat does he wear in the winter? And say, is this good or is this better? Which one is better? You know, see, that's the choice mind makes. It makes you do the things, but it makes them do it better. That's what it makes it do. Right? This is the reason why aql is not there to protect us from harm. Our sense does that. This is the reason when Allah speaks about hellfire and Jahannam, He never, spoke to our aql for that. He never, appealed to our intelligence. He didn't say, look at it, use your aql and, you know that this is hellfire. You don't need to say that. Why? Because fear is something that you don't get from intelligence. Fear is an emotion that you get by senses. You don't need that. You know, you don't need aql for that. You show a fire, any kid would know, I don't want to go near that. So he doesn't need to have aql for that. He doesn't need to have intellect for that. So Allah did not, put the fear of hell through our intelligence. It's through our fear that we just go away from hellfire. We don't want hellfire, right? If anyone shows you fire, you don't want hellfire. That's the idea. Allah, He gave you intelligence not because to choose between heaven and hell. He didn't do that for you. This would be a wrong choice. It would be a wrong thing for Allah to do that. The idea that other religions don't understand, that Islam understands and gives, is the fact that, listen, Allah did not bring you to earth to give you the choice between heaven and hell. All religions will say that. Ask them, what's the choice we have? You go to heaven or you go to hell? Allah did not make mankind for a choice like that. Let me give an example so you understand it. You know, I come to, or you know what, you come to my house in Florida, right? You come to my house as a guest. I invite you as a guest. Come over. And you come over. So when you come over, you know, I give you two drinks. He says, listen, I'm giving you these two choices. Two drinks. One, orange juice, Florida orange juice. Right? He says, wow, orange juice. What's the other one? Oh, that's poison. Choose whatever you want. It's your choice. And you'll be like, are you crazy? This Maulana's a freak, you know? You won't do that, right? You'll be like scared. This guy's crazy. What's he doing? I mean, why would you? I mean, listen, I'll choose the orange juice, thank you, but why did you offer me the poison? Right. So now just imagine, if Allah brings us as a guest to the earth and saying, listen, your choice, heaven or hell? Ya Allah, what kind of a choice is that? What kind of a choice is that? We don't want to make that choice. The fact is that Allah did not give us that choice. Allah said, listen, your choice is that not between heaven and hell. That's a very bad choice. The choice, the reason I made you and brought you to earth is to choose which part of heaven you want to go in. How far? How far do you want to go? How much do you want to climb? So many levels. See, this is where aql comes in. So just the nature of aql is what? To see our situation and to tell us, make it better. A person who is happy and content with his life and with his situation, if he's content and happy with the situation, then there's only two reasons why that could happen. Either he's retarded, right? He doesn't have an aql, or really he's high on something. why else would you not look at your situation and say, man, I want to better myself? Really, a person, you need to understand that this is natural in us, so we want to become better. So what makes us restless? Because we have a brain. That's what makes me restless. If I am not restless, I should question my brain. I should question that. Why am I happy with this horrible, this existence that I have? This monotonous existence. Every day getting up, every day working, every day going to sleep, and in between doing things that are unspeakable. Really unspeakable. Right? How many things we do in the day that we can't even tell others? If we tell others, they'll be like, come on man, keep that to yourself. Really? And we do all these things, and we are happy with this life? Don't we want any vertical motion? To become something better? You see, when a person starts using his mind, then he starts becoming restless. And when he becomes restless and he becomes has the emotion of this anxiety in him that I am not happy with my situation, then he starts to go and look forward. Then he starts. And then we come to the second step. Because when you're restless and you're unhappy with your situation, what would you naturally do? You will start to search. You will start to search, where can I find peace? Where can I find my happiness? Where can I fulfill my dream? Where? This is the second step. The second step, again, I don't know, you know, how much time do we have? I don't have a watch or a clock over here, you know? Actually, I do have a clock. I didn't know when I started. Right? How much time do we have? So, you know.
20.
No, I don't want plenty of time. I can go on, as I said. 20 minutes, that's good. Thank you, you know, being honest. Right? So, the thing is that the second step is searching. You are restless, and now I'm searching. Rest, and my friends, just one more point about restlessness, right? Just understand it before we go on. The more intense is your restlessness, the better you will be afterwards. The better you will be afterwards. Remember this. If a person does not feel this restlessness, if he doesn't feel this anxiety within himself, then if you give such a person deen and religion and Islam, he will be a bad Muslim. He will be a bad Muslim. You give him Islam without this ache in his heart to want it, to want this change, he will be a bad Muslim. And he will be a Muslim who is going to go away one day from Islam. He will not last long. This is the reason why we make so much mistakes in training ourselves or our children. Children education, when you see, why is it bad? Why don't they listen? It's because you didn't create that emotion inside of them and intensified it. Intensify it. Let them want it first. Let them feel the want first. Then give it. Don't give it right away. You know, a child, for example, if your son or daughter is asking you something, don't give the answer right away. Oh. Do some thinking first. Do some thinking first. Become more restless, then I'll give it to you. Right? Don't give the answer right away. You know, a lot of times what happens is that whenever they ask you, oh, this is the answer, this is the answer. Right away we give it as if, you know, we feel like, I know. But you're not helping them like that. The idea is, let them yearn for it first. Let them want it first. This is how Allah does it. Why do you think He doesn't answer your du'as all the time right away? You make a du'a, why are you not answering? He said, no, yearn a little bit more for that. Get some appreciation for what you're asking first in your heart. Increase that appreciation. Right? And then the more you ask, the more you ask, the more you ask, you know what He will give. But He will give it when you are really deserving it. When you can actually use it and utilize it. That's when He will give it. The same way we need to teach our children. You know, increase that yearning in them first. What do you want to know that for? What do you want to know that for? Oh, you know what? You know, I mean, there's a lot of people who come to me and ask me, you know, oh, my son, you know, he says, you know, he asked me, you know, I can't see Allah and this and that. How should we answer that? He said, listen, you know, ask him to think more. Ask him to think more. I don't give him the answer right away. Let him think. What do you want to know? Just that, you know, just a question occurred. It's not even important. Even if I don't know, it doesn't matter. No, that I don't want to tell you that. I want you to first know that this is important. This is, my friends, the way to teach and educate the way Allah does it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So searching, my friends, is the second step. We need to have, we need to search. We start searching, looking for it. And here is where our thinking counts. How much can we think? How much can we go forward? The first step required aql. Right? Understand that. What was the first step? Restlessness, right? Restlessness. And this is an outcome of our aql. Right? Second step is searching. Searching for that goal. Searching for the destination. Searching for the place where we will find peace. And the force behind it is our fikr. Is our thinking. A person who thinks will find it. This is the way when a person has this restlessness in him, he will search. When he searches, where does he end up? He will end up to his goal. But first he will search. The searching will take time. And this searching is what brings you to your goal. Searching brings you to a goal. If the restlessness wasn't there, then the searching would be there. If the searching would be there, you wouldn't find your goal. That's simple. Salman was restless, so he searched. And because he searched, he found his goal, the Prophet of Allah. He found his goal. This is search. Right? And you know, he came to him and says, "You are the one. Yeah, you are the one I spent all my life looking for. You are the one. I've been searching for you." Right? This is what he said, right? He saw him and said, "Are you the one?" "Yes, you are the one." Just imagine this. All his life he searched. And you know, when you finally found him, it's like tears in his eyes. Looking at him, wow. It's worth it. The search was worth it. My friends, this is where it all comes down to. Now the searching comes from our fikr, our thinking. How do we use our fikr? I'll give a very small example. I'll give a very small example and we'll end it here. Really, how do you use your fikr to come to Allah? How do you use your thinking? That's what I'm saying. I don't want to give an example. I want you to think. Yeah, I want to show you how to think. Allah showed how to think in the Quran. He explained it. You know, we don't have time to go into that. Some detail time. Sometimes some more time we'll go into it. But just to give you an idea, how do you reach Allah? Use your mind to reach Allah. Very easy, my friends. Let's see. How many people are in this room? Right? 150, 200, very good. Let's say these 200 people, if they're all applauding me, you know, great job, you know, applauding me. Now, how many people are outside? 2 million, 20 million, right? Now, is all these 2,000 people applauding me, would I be worried about the rest of the 2 million? Right, 2 billion? I'm not, right? Hey man, I got these 200 people applauding me. Right? So I'll be happy with this. I don't care about the 2 million. Even those others, they don't even know me. They don't even know who I am. Right? And nobody. But here you have these 200 million people and all of them are clapping me. Tell me, what is more important right now for me? These 200 that I have in front of me or the 2 billion that are outside? 200 here, right? I got them, right? 200 people are doing this. This is my akal saying it. I mean, my thinking. I'm using my thinking now. I want you to think along with me. Now, let me give you another scenario. The 2 billion people, all the world, I don't know how many, what's the population? 6 billion, 7 billion? All right, 7 billion, let's put it average, right? 7 billion people in the world. If 7 billion people applaud me, if someone billion people praise me, if 7 billion people are clapping at me, praising me, would that be more important? You know, all of this, all the 7 billion people are doing that. But the one person I care about the most is not. The one I love the most, then one I care about the most, the one who's the most special to me, that person is not applauding you, as he is upset with you. Tell me, you tell me. Would that change your opinion about the 7 billion? You say, you know what, I don't care about the 7 billion. I care about the one I love the most. Which would be more important? Just imagine, I'm asking you to think, you know, don't just give me, think that if you are a famous person, I don't know what you are, rock star, you know, huge gathering, huge following, people are laughing, all these things at you, and you, the person who loves you the most, is upset at you. Will all that applause help you? You will still feel disturbed. you will still feel upset. And then question yourself, why am I upset? I have 7 billion people applauding me. Why am I so angry right now? Why can't these 7 billion people make me happy? When only one person is upset at me. Why is it? Because I love him more, right? He's special to me. You see? Now, you understood it? You understood this emotion? You use your mind, you understood this emotion. That's how you come to Imam Zaman. That's how you come. Really, that's how you come to Imam. You come to Imam like that. You know, Imam, it doesn't matter what everyone thinks about me. What really matters is what you think about me. Because you're special to me. You're special. I don't care what they all say. I just care what you say. What you think about me. That's what I care about. My friends, why do you love the Imam so much? I should ask you another question first. I'm sorry I asked that question. I should ask another question before I ask that. Do you love the Imam?
Yes.
How much do you love the Imam? A lot? Okay, if you were able to put your love of the Imam in the loudness of your salawats, how would it sound like?
Allah!
So you do love the Imam, right? Alhamdulillah. Right, you do love the Imam. So tell me, now I'll come to the question I asked you before. Why do you love the Imam? Why do you love the Imam?
Because he guides us to be closer to Allah.
Okay, alhamdulillah, you know. Look inside yourself. Really look inside yourself. Why do you love the Imam? Do you think that you are good and it's because you're good that your heart loves the Imam and others don't? Hey, I want us to really see the answer behind this. Why is it that I love Imam Hussein and I cry for him? Really? Let me give you an example, right? Friends. I'm sure we have people here whose mothers have passed away. They've passed away. And I have not experienced that. But I can just imagine that if a person whose mother passes away, how hard it must be for the person. Right? Because, you know, you go back in your life and you remember the best times in your life in the lap of your mother. Right? Who loved you, cared for you, handled every little issue for you. She was caring for you more than anyone else. I mean, anything else, any need that you have, she would take care of it. You look back at that and say, I lost a person who loved me that much, right? So obviously you would cry, you feel pain, you would feel hard, wouldn't it? I mean, it's really looking at it, it would be hard on a person to go through such a thing, right? Now tell me, you have lost your mother, how long ago? You know, I mean, you see that, you cry for a day, you cry for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, I mean, what is it? Then after that, a year goes by, 2 years goes by. Now the only thing you remember her by are the yearly majlis you do in her name. Barsi, you know, name. And after some years, the barsi goes away also. And then, you know, whenever, for example, you go by her grave, you will go there and read a Fatiha. Right? And a time will come, you know, really, how much would you remember her? It goes away, right? It goes away. Really goes away. My friends, now I want you to understand this. I mean, why do you love your mother so much? I mean, really, because she loved you, right? You feel her love for you. That's why you love her back. But that love goes away. Does that mean that she didn't love you that much? That your love is going away? She loved, but to the extent she could. She loved you. And you loved her back. And you cried for her, you did majlis for her, barsi, and then after that fatiha, for years you did it. You did your job. No one's going to blame you for being a bad child. You did your job. Now I want you to compare that and ask yourself, why is it that I cried for my mother and my loved ones for a few days or a few months or a few years? And why is it that I cry for Fatima and her children all my life? Really? Have you ever thought about that? Why do you cry for Fatima every time you hear her name? Why is it that you cry? You think that this is because you are good that you're crying? No. You're not crying because you are good. You know why you're crying? You're crying because this crying is a reaction to how much Fatima loved you. How much did she love you? Do you imagine that? That is what's making you cry. Really, how much she loved you. How much she loved the Shias. This is why, this reaction, she is the one who loved, not us. We are just reacting to her love. We are just reacting to her love. This is what we are crying for, my friends. This is the reason why we cry. You think that you are that good that you cry for Hussein? No, it's Hussein. Who has trained you? It's Hussein who's making you cry. He's the reason, not I. I'm not the reason. She's the reason. You know, how much does she love us? You know, it is said that when she went to fight for Fadak, she had to go through these hardships, these difficulties, these sufferings. You know who she had in mind? Who did she have in mind when she went there to Fadak? To put herself in all of those hardships? Who did she have in mind when she went there to stand up for Ali? And because of that, all the humiliation she had to face? You know who she had in mind when she used to go and knock on the doors of Medina and they would refuse to answer her knocks? And they would ignore her, and she would be standing at the doors and no one wants her to come in their houses. You know who she was thinking of at that time? It is said that she's thinking about those Shias of Ali who would come so that they would be guided and that they would be cared for and that they would not go astray. I am standing up for Ali today so that those who come later will be guided. Those who come later will not be going astray. She is caring for us so much that she is going through those difficulties, you know. Can I say it in simple words, you know, so that you can understand the intensity of what I'm trying to say? Can I say it in simple words? Allow me to say it, you know. In other words, what I want to say is that Fatima was beaten up because of you. Yes. Fatima was beaten. How can I say it in any other way, my friend? You know how much she cared for you, that she went through those things caring for you? It's you. You're crying because of her love for you. Let me share a hadith with you, you know, and so that you understand. It said that Allah, when He made love, He divided love into 100 parts. He divided love into 100 parts. He kept 99 for Himself, and one He gave to the rest of the universe. One part of it He gave to the rest of the universe. And in the one part that He gave to the rest of the universe, He divided that one part into 100 parts. He divided that one part into 100 parts, and He gave 99 to Ahlul Bayt, and the rest to the, and one part to the rest of humanity. One part to the rest of humanity. Now you can compare yourself and your love to the love that Fatima has for you. Fatima has 99 parts of that love, and you here have only one part of that love. If you are loving Fatima today, that you cry for her and you left everything so that you can come her here and remember her, then imagine how much that she cried for you and that she cared for you, that is now you're reacting to it. Can you imagine that? How much you're reacting? This is Fatima, my friends. This is the love of Fatima that we have right now. When we feel this love, when we feel it's because she loved us, it's because of her love for us. You know, there's a reason when it said that when Hussein was born and he went to the hands of Rasulullah, and Rasulullah started crying and tears were being shed and tears were falling from his eyes, and Fatima saw that and said, "My father, why are you crying for? Why are you crying for?" So he said, "Fatima, that I had just heard the news that your son is going to be killed. He is going to be killed thirsty, and he's going to be killed in Karbala." And when Fatima heard that, she said, "Father, will you be there?" He said, "No." He says, "You know, will Ali be there?" "No." He said, "Will I be there?" "No." "Then who would be there for Hussein? Who would be there for Hussein?" And he said that Allah will create a group of people who will cry for your son. Don't worry, there will be a group of people who would cry for your son. And you know why? Because Fatima, you are going to show, I know, so much love for them that they will react to your love forever. That they will cry forever because you will love them to that extent, Fatima. This is Fatima's love. This is a testimony of her love for you. Just now, how can we just say this in simple words? This is tonight, the night of the Shahadat of Hazrat Fatima, according to one riwayat, and we have two riwayat for a Shahadat. And for us, we call these Ayyam-e Fatimiya because we want to remember her as much as we can. We want to remember her as much as we can. Really, my friends, you know how much she cares about you. There's one hadith, you know, we see that when Fatima, you know, when Fatima, when she is going to come on the day of judgment, when she's going to come on the day of judgment and you are going to stand, obviously we who stand before her will be ashamed. We'll really be ashamed. We'll be ashamed. You know why I'll be ashamed? Because, you know, really there's so much to be ashamed of in front of Fatima. So much to be ashamed of. Fatima, you gave us so much, and what have you done? You gave us so much, you showed us so much love, and what did we do in return? And obviously we'll be ashamed, but you know what? When Fatima will come, she will not let us feel ashamed. She will say, "No, you come under my wings. You have my shafa'at." And then and we feel happy about it. You know, when we get that shafa'at, when we get that blessing, when we get that salvation, we will be so happy with glee that we will not know who's around us. Really, we would not know who's around us, who's beside us, who's behind me, because I will be so happy, I won't know what to do. I would be so happy. But Fatima, you know what she will say? "You have my shafa'at." And listen, that person there also, I want to give him shafa'at. You will turn around that and you will see, who's this person? Who's this person? And why is she telling me that? He says, you know why? Because once you were walking down the street and he respected you. He respected you. He was a friend of yours because he had respect for you. I'm going to give shafa to him also. That's how much I love you. In other words, Fatima loves the Shia so much and her followers so much that even those people who had respect for them, Fatima will give shafaat for them. Can you imagine? We are not caring about our friends, but Fatima is caring. I will care. You are my children. Even your friends I will care about. This is how much she loved us. And now when we see what she went through, I can't speak of the things that have been written in books in regarding her martyrdom and her shahadat. But all I can say is this much, that if this is the love that she has for us, imagine what was the love that Hassan and Hussein, that she had for Hassan and Hussein. Can you imagine that? This is why on the day of her martyrdom, she was in such a bad situation that she could not even stand up. But she mustered all the energy that she had and she asked her servant to go away. He says, you go away. She went and cleaned the house. She got Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein ready, got them in new clothes and said, you go and play with your neighbors. And then she made food in the house. And she got everything ready. When the servant came back, she said, why did you do all this? I'm here for you. Why did you do all this? He says, because I'm going away. I don't want to leave my children like this. Just one last time, I want to see them happy. I don't want to see them like this. When she went inside a prayer room and the time came for her to leave, they didn't know. And when the servant went inside and found out, and then she came and told Imam Ali. Imam Ali went inside to confirm. He looked at Fatima on her prayer mat and said, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. When Fatima went through that, you know, Imam Ali, he gave the ghusl and kafan. And inshallah, when Imam Ali gave the ghusl and kafan, with all of those things that he gave, you know what happened after that? He said, he got her ready, gave the kafan, laid her on the bed, and asked the children to come. He says, children, pay your last respect to your mother. Pay your last respect to your mother. And the children came there. Imam Hassan came there, each child with tears flowing down their eyes to their cheeks. Each child looking at that mother who cared so much and loved them so much. Each child looking at that Imam Hassan came and started crying. Zainab came and she started shedding her tears for Fatima. And then Imam Ali was next to them. And as they were crying, Imam Ali noticed that Hussein is not here. And Fatima had made a special will to Imam Ali about Imam Hussein. And she said to him, when she was dying, she said to Imam Ali that, Ali, you know, I want you to take special care of Hussein after me. He says, why Hussein? It's because Hussein has a love for me. Hussein loves me a lot and he will miss me a lot after I leave. Make sure you look after him and take a look for him and take special care of him. Imam Ali promised her that. Now when Imam Ali did not see Imam Hussein there, he turned around and said, Hussein, where are you? Hussein was in a small little place outside the room and he was crying and he came to Hussein and said, what's the matter? Why don't you come and give your respect to your mother and see her for the last time and make ziyarat of your mother? Imam Hussein said, oh my father, I am to my mother like Isa was to Maryam. When Maryam, she died, she called for Isa. My mother, when she calls me, I will go to her. And it's that point when Fatima called out to Imam Hussein and said, my son, come to me, my son. Come to me. And Hussein went to Fatima, but that wasn't the last going. Fatima knew that this is not the place for her. The meeting is going to come later with Hussein. That meeting, you know, when it came on the afternoon of Ashura, when Imam Hussein fell from the horse when he fell from the horse onto the ground, everyone who has been to Karbala knows that where he fell and where he was slaughtered are in two different places. When he fell down from the horse, there was a few steps to go. He saw that place and then he was crawling towards that place in order to get to that place. When he was going there, you know why he was going there? How would he know where that place is? So many arrows in his body, so many thorns in his body. How does he know that place is? Because Fatima is sitting there calling out to her son, "Son, I'm here, come to me. This is the place of your promised lottery." سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلب يا محمود بحق محمد يا الله بحق علي يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة يا محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسين الله give us the tawfiq to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the reappearance of your imam and make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين ماتم حسين